Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 87th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Sarai Manyel. Sarai was born to South Sudanese parents and grew up in Khartoum, Sudan, and then Egypt, before resettling to California and finally to Maine in 2003. She's a recent graduate of Arizona State University and has returned home to Maine to teach at Roots and Fruits, a unique preschool which teaches children to embrace diversity, encouraging them to learn about and honor their own roots as well as those of others. Thank you so much for coming in today on New Mainers Speak, Sarai.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
You were just a little girl when you lived in Sudan and Egypt, and I wonder what you remember from that time. What was the child's eye view like of Africa for you?
It was wonderful, from what I remember, because I was surrounded by my family. My cousins were always around me, my grandmother, my aunts, they were all there, so it was a wonderful time, now that I'm thinking about it, that I don't have that here, but it was great.
Did you attend any school?
I did. I went to school until second grade, and right before I was starting third grade, we had to leave, and I was really upset, so I did go to school.
Yeah, and you learned a little Arabic there in school?
Yeah, in school we learn Arabic and English, so.
Did your family leave and go to a refugee camp?
No, we did not live in a refugee camp. We lived in our home in Sudan. My mother had a home with my grandmother, and when we moved to Egypt, we lived in an apartment building, so we had an apartment in Cairo.
Nice. Egypt is home to many people in transition, isn't it?
Yes.
A lot of New Mainers have come through Egypt at some point in their journey.
Lots of people.
Refugees don't get a choice of where to relocate. In fact, only 1% of world refugees get resettled at all. And I wonder what your family thought about being resettled to the United States. Did they know anybody here?
My oldest brother was here couple of years before we did. So he was here, and that was kind of our relationship to get here. I don't think he decided to come here. He just got the chance to come here, so he did.
So when you're waiting to be resettled, you just get a notice that you've been chosen to go somewhere, right?
Yes.
And you said earlier your cousins went to Australia.
Yes, almost all of my cousins went to Australia, and only one of my, my cousins, the family, one of that family got resettled in Canada, but most of them are in Australia.
Interesting. Do you ever see them?
I've seen them once. My cousins did come visit me here in the U.S. from Australia, and it was just really nice to reconnect again and see how different we've become simply because we've lived in different countries.
Mm-hmm. Great example of how policy shapes culture.
Mm-hmm.
So you were the sixth out of eight children, and that made 9 airfares to the United States. I'm not sure that people tend to realize that refugees' flights are paid for by the resettlement agencies, but they are expected to be repaid. And that means that new arrivals start off here in debt. How was it that your family was so resilient and able to thrive here with the new language, new culture, monetary system?
My mother worked when she could, and my brothers did as well. So they did help my mother with the financial situation, and that's how they repaid it and got us through to where I am right now.
Your older brothers were how old when they came here?
They were possibly in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What kind of work did people find as new Mainers?
As new Mainers, here in Maine, I don't think they had a lot of option. It was either retail or like factory jobs. That's what they did. And my oldest brother eventually kind of just got tired and joined the military, and he translated for the U.S. military for about 7 years, because he went to school in Arabic. He went to a university in Arabic, so he had the language, so he translated. He was a translator in the army.
That was a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
How did he find that experience in the military?
I honestly don't know, because when he does come back, he does not share his experience with us. He keeps to himself.
Hmm.
But I feel like it did change him. Being in the military changed him a lot.
Hmm. For better or worse?
I would say worst.
More quiet?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are things that he's holding on to.
Yeah. That must be hard to see. Yeah. So where did you attend high school, and how did you decide to go to UMass and ASU from there?
So we moved to Lewiston, and that's where I completed my middle school and high school. And I desperately wanted to get out of Maine. Boston was the closest, you know, paradise where there's diversity and there is excitement. So I wanted to go there so bad, and I did.
What did you hope to study when you went to school?
When I went to school, I felt pressured to become something, because in the African community, they expect you to like get some sort of like very sophisticated degree, like study medical or law or something, you know, huge. But I went there and I found myself, you know, wanting to study global literature, just simply reading all these stories from around the world from people that were like me. And I just dived in, and it was beautiful.
I love that you let your heart guide you a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a common story. People go to college intending to study something, and then they find they really want to be getting the books off this other shelf at the bookstore. It's their first indication that they might need to change courses a little bit.
Yeah.
Change course and courses. When you got to college in Massachusetts, did you feel prepared? Did you have enough scholarship and learning behind you to be successful in school?
No, I was not prepared, but it was all risky, because I worked that summer before I left to save as much as I can. And I feel like I was lucky, because as soon as I got there, I landed a job. And I got an apartment, and my loans were enough to pay for my courses, and I felt lucky. And it was like just a risk that I took, and I'm like, Maine is going to be here. I will come back if it doesn't work out, but I'm going to leave Maine right now, and I'm going to make it happen. And it just worked out, and I felt like I was lucky.
Well, I think a little luck, and I think a little skill, too. I mean, you had to override all the advice you were getting to stay in Maine, where it was more safe, and, you know, safer bet. And you really just knew your heart and took the risk, a courageous risk, heading off to the big city. Did you know anybody else in Boston when you went down there?
I have an extended family who moved to Lynn, Massachusetts. But the relationship is not very close. So
just in case of emergencies, there's somebody down there. I think you did something quite notable. You left for college and then you returned to Maine. And this is something that our shrinking state is hungry for, yet not a lot of recent graduates take that route. And I wonder what made you return to Maine, and Portland in particular.
I would say mostly family, and after leaving Maine, I kind of came back and valued Portland changed a lot. And when I came back here as an adult, there is a new perspective of what Southern Maine is, and it was beautiful, the culture, the what Portland became with the local businesses and like the investment in the art scene, it was also very good for me at the time where I was. I was in a bigger city and it was nice, but then there was like a spiritual development going on with me and being near my family and then seeing Portland for what it was, I decided to stay.
I'm so glad you did. You're listening to WMPG. If you're just joining us, welcome. This is New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Sarai Manyel. Her roots are in South Sudan, and she's sharing her fruits of her labors here in South Portland, Maine, at a unique preschool called Roots and Fruits. I wonder what you can tell us about Roots and Fruits, Sarai.
Roots and Fruits is it's a beautiful, beautiful preschool. And I wish that could eventually be extended into an actual secondary school where, you know, younger children get that sort of education. It's not just learning how to recognize shapes and count and read and write your name. It's also spiritual development. It's also social development. It's also being aware of the culture and the diversity around you and being aware of your identity and your ancestors. So these, at Roots and Fruits, children get to learn that.
How do they do that with little children? They're 3 and 4?
Yes. I asked myself that question too, until I actually went and experienced it. Children coming from all walks of life, and even children that they're family been here for centuries and don't even know what their roots are, find a way to, you know, say, hey, you know, maybe I have a little German in me or Scottish or Spanish in me. And we Google and learn all the ways that they can count in their languages. And also we encourage their family to share that with their children so that they have a day like show and tell where they come in and, you know, and talk about something that they do as a tradition in their home that's either part of their culture or something they developed here. We also celebrate all holidays like Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, Eid, and Ramadan. We talk about it so they know what it is and why their classmates are celebrating it and what it means to them.
I can see that being really fun for little kids to get to have those fabulous cultural experiences. I mean, it's just rich, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Online it said, as part of your mission statement, our peace-based curriculum helps children to develop communication and problem-solving skills, as well as compassion and understanding toward themselves and others. I thought that was lovely to have an eye on making peaceful citizens from the youngest among us.
Yeah, and every day that they go to school, they do the kindness pledge, where they pledge that they will be kind to themselves and other around them, including Mother Earth. And they take they make a peace promise every day that they're there.
What can you say it? Is there
peace promise?
Uh-huh.
Peace is a promise that I make for myself. I promise to love and I promise to protect, love, and care for you.
I love that. You know, they say that there are only two real feelings, love and fear. And so you're invoking the love and asking them to develop that.
Yes.
And know the love.
Mm-hmm.
And practice the love with themselves and others, personally and as cultures. That's beautiful. Sounds like you get to use the full breadth of your understanding about cross-cultural experiences at this preschool. And I wonder what it is about teaching that speaks to you personally.
It's watching these children grow every day, and they teach me in the process. Even the tough ones, they teach me too. They challenge me to find a way to get to them. And in the process, I'm learning And they're teaching me how to be a better person, how to be a better example for them. And you see that every day when you just watch them interact, that, and then you see what we've been teaching them coming out in their vocabulary, in the way they treat each other, in the way they treat just the items surrounding them, not just other human beings, but the books, the school itself. And we encourage them to respect Mother Earth.
How do they do that?
By cleaning up, and we have plants, and we always remind them that they are beings and that they need love and care. So with trees too, when we are outside, when the weather is nice, we go outside and if they're climbing on that tree, we ask them to ask the tree for permission to climb it.
Oh, that's beautiful. Really different approach, right?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I bet they respond well to that. Children have a little spiritual flair to them.
Yeah, sometimes they need to be reminded, and sometimes they remind us too. You'd be surprised.
Mm-hmm. So, what are your dreams for your future, Sarai? What would you like to do? You're a young woman, educated, and it seems to me you have so many paths possible in front of you. I wonder what you would like.
I've learned so much, and I still want to continue learning every day for the rest of my life. I want to see the world and experience different culture in the process. I want to teach people that will teach me too.
Would you like to teach globally or experience the world and come back and share that here?
I think that's something I also want to do.
Mm-hmm. You are so observant of cultural nuances, having bridged two different cultures or more throughout your life. And I imagine that your own poetry reflects this sensitivity. Would you be willing to read one of your untitled poems for us today?
Yes.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. It'd be my first time sharing my poetry with the public, apart from school.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, super. I can't wait to be your first ears.
Okay.
You have a beautiful journal in which you keep your poetry, too.
Thank you. So, this poem came out during a period when I was evolving as a person, and there was an identity evolution as well as understanding how you got here when you try to filter who you are, but then there's so much of what you've gone through as part of you. Where I live is a part of me. What I've learned is a part of me. All the languages that I speak is a part of me. So I can't filter that down and say I am this one, you know, girl from South Sudan. I am many things.
Yes, you are.
So, and also, even though I did not experience the Civil War, it's a part of me because that caused the discomfort to drive my family out of there and to bring me here to experience what I've experienced so far. Mental slavery led to an emancipation, finding one's reflection in its natural station. I became who I was born to be after many years of ignorantly killing myself slowly, intoxicating my lips with words of evil. Like fire, I burned away my youth into ashes, poison flowing through my veins, oppressing my being as I kneeled on my knees, bleeding through my open black skin like it has seen war. But the war was deep within, in the realest rim. No lens can detect it, not even a light as bright as the diamonds many African souls have sacrificed their children's hearts for. Peace was the price I paid, he paid, she paid, as violence ruled our tongues and we carved our eyes out with words like machetes. Now we walk blindly into our graves, bodies turning cold like stones, dark, deep, and wide. Around the world, we drink its purity and spit it back out like poison, contaminating the future, a long line of generation lost, gongling on the face of earth as mere bodies without souls. Hmm.
You are so brave to read your poetry on the radio, and it is vulnerable and beautiful. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Sarai, you are a young woman with wisdom seemingly beyond your years. Holding two distinctly different cultures, you have found your own unique voice, integrating the gifts you have to share in this lifetime with your rich life experiences. It's quite beautiful to witness. And thank you very much for coming on New Mainers Speak today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Kate Manahan in the studio with my guest, Sarai Manuel. We would close today's program with a song that she's chosen for us. Sarai, would you introduce the song to our listeners and share why you picked this particular song today?
I'd be happy to. I've gone through a period where reggae music kind of enlightened me and gave me spiritual guidance. And in the process, I ran into this artist named Chronix, and his words were very, very powerful that it became a part of me. So this is one of the songs that I'd like people to listen to that describes me in a way.
Yeah, from one poet to another.
Without a care in the world, you know me.
No worry for my head top, not at all.
And if you know me, you know, say I know.
No,
put no trouble upon my back.
Oh.
No, hey. Oh, no worry about that. Cha-cha, rise me out of my bed. I'm in for if I'm gonna wash my dread. Me alright, alright. I'm a say cha-cha, sunrise, wake me up this morning. And I can hear Mama Africa calling. Alright, alright. I tell you me alright, yeah.
I got to give the most high praise. Promise to lead them from both eyes raised. Breathing the breath of life, so I pray to still I see I for watch over those like we.
Yeah.
Smile with the rising sun. The creation me never hiding from. No negativity up in our high kingdom. Mama Africa, your child to come.
I'm a Jaja, rise me out of my bed.
Mother Earth, you I are free from a day. Me chew some carrot and beet and eat a jelly. Then dipping at the river cause me feel big of it.
I wash off the crosses off of me. Sweet life King Selassie off of me. Never be ungrateful, no people go sleep and they never wake up. But Jaja rise me out of my bed.
Sunlight, I climb up the hill. Now I'm no work, so I time for me chill. Some whole of meditation and trying to be still. Visions of Mama Africa are flowed by. Even though you're far, I feel you're close by. The mysteries of life, I seek to know why. Healing the most
high.
say rise this morning. Give thanks, yeah. Give thanks, yeah. You're alright, yeah. You're alright, oh, alright. Yeah. And I say give thanks and praise to the Most High, and for health and strength, knowledge and wisdom and overstanding. Amen. Chimney.